Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and man, do we have a good Monday lineup for you. Second hour, Scott Hahn is going to be with us. You know Scott Hahn. Some people have heard of him. He's kind of like the Pope, except just married. He's very famous, and he's very Catholic, and he's very brilliant, and we're delighted to have him second hour. First hour, I hope you'll we won't just overwhelm you with quality first hour so that you'll stay around for that Scott Hahn fella, because first hour we welcome our good friend Joe Heschmeyer. Joe, a very, very fine apologist. He's the man behind Shameless Popery on the internet, among other things. He's also a brand new dad. After graduating from Georgetown Law Center, he became a lawyer, and then he was like, no, I don't think lawyer is the thing for me, so he became a seminarian. So he studied the faith for a long time, and now he's married and a father of a brand new one-month-old baby. Joe Heschmeyer, thanks for being with us on this Monday.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's very, very nice to see you again. You know, you're one of my favorite apologists. I don't know if I've told you that, but
tell me that. I never know when I'm supposed to take you seriously. So I'm grateful, I think.
The only time don't take me seriously is when I'm saying anything about Trent Horn. Other than that, I just think, you know, what it takes to be an apologist is knowledge and genuine love for the person that you're speaking to. Which comes from genuine love for Jesus Christ. And I feel like you got all that, Joe. So, and I feel like your daughter hit the jackpot. She got a really good dad.
Thanks. She's got a really good mom too. I gotta give credit where it's due.
Yeah, you have to. You better, as a matter of fact.
Her mom used to work for Catholic Answers, so.
I didn't know that. Now I've been caught completely flat-footed. That was before I came here, though. So, right?
Yeah, I was fresh out of college. She had a job similar, I think, to what Marie Dixon does now.
Oh, really? Assistant producer Marie. Yeah.
I don't really know. I don't really know what she did. She had something behind her. That's all I know.
Sometime take an interest in your wife's life. Yes. Sometime, Joe, maybe take that up as a pastime, listening to her. 888-318-7884, the number here. And we're going to talk about giving today. This is often thought of as the season of giving. I think it's obvious why it's the season of giving. The tax year is coming to a close. But not only that, this is the time of year where we celebrate that God gave himself to us in the person of Jesus Christ. So without question, we think about giving at this time of year. And if you have questions about giving, about what's appropriate to give, when it's appropriate to give, what are you required and what are you encouraged to do in that regard, and why? Why the church is in many, many ways a church of giving. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer, you just wrote a piece on Shameless Popery called The Theology of Giving. Can you give us a kind of a breakdown of the Catholic theology of giving?
Yeah, so I wanted to do two things. The first thing is to explain the difference between tithing or kind of giving to the church. That is the first category. The second is almsgiving, you know, giving to the poor. And the third is charitable giving. And we often think of these three things as entirely one and the same, and in fact they're not, and in some pretty important ways they differ. Tithing is a duty and justice to the church. It's more similar to paying your taxes, which I'm glad you mentioned that. You get something from the church, you're a member of the family, and you have a duty and justice to help continue the church's operations on a material level. And that's the standard for that in the Old Testament was 10%, and the New Testament is based on what you're able to give. And the church describes this as the very necessary minimum. So this is not over and above. It doesn't rise to the level of charity. These are the basics. You're canonically required to do this under Canon 222. You also have a duty in justice to give to the poor and to promote social justice. And we'll get to why that's a duty in justice. But just recognize that it exists and that we owe it to those who have less than we do to help take care of them. And the third category, charitable giving, is giving in charity, as the name suggests. So yeah, spiritual authors will warn against presuming that you're doing charitable giving when you give for the tax write-off. That's kind of a blasphemous misuse of the word charity. But in fact, on the other hand, when you're doing something out of love, then you really are charitably giving, even if it isn't a financial contribution. So almsgiving ought to be both money given to the poor and justice and a source of, you know, an expression of charity. The Catechism says the demands of justice must be satisfied first of all. That which is already doing justice is not to be offered as a gift of charity, but we can go above and beyond what would be strictly necessary, and then it becomes charitable giving. That's the 20,000-foot overview.
Okay, that's a fair 20,000-foot overview. I feel like there's a growing tendency, and maybe it's not growing. It's hard to know what the past was like, but it seems like it's growing, this growing intensity of individualism, where people would say, I'm not required to give anything at all. There can't be a requirement. It all has to be, it's my personal choice what I give and when I give.
Yeah, so I think two things. Number one, I think this has been a problem for a while. I discovered in kind of researching for this post that the word pittance, you know, like you're giving a very small amount, comes from the word for pity and referred to religious donations. So they were so embarrassingly small in the past that to receive a pittance was to receive like not enough. So that doesn't bode well for our ancestors. But yeah, we really can fall into this notion that we have an absolute private property right, and therefore no one is owed anything of what we have. And from a Catholic perspective, there's just no way of defending that. Now, I want to couple that with
Wait. I want you to couple that. But seriously, I really think that for Americans, this is very problematic. And we don't realize often that we are in conflict with our own Catholic faith when we make it absolute. Our private property rights are absolute. I do not know if you have read the Bill of Rights, but I'm pretty sure that somewhere in there it says they can't take my stuff. So how can this is an American blasphemy, but can you justify this idea that I don't have an absolute right even to my private property?
I can, on the basis of a theology of creation. But before that, I want to recognize that, yeah, like St. Ambrose of Milan, when he's criticizing the philosophers of his day. Now, Ambrose, 4th century, he's the one who helps convert St. Augustine. He's one of the leading lights. He's one of the first people ever to be declared a doctor of the church. And one of the differences between Catholic theology and what you'd get among a Greek pagan is he says for them, there's an absolute right to private property, and that there's a sharp distinction between what's private and what's public, and that for a Christian, this sharp distinction doesn't exist. That there are things that belong to you, but not in so absolute of a sense that you can refuse to give them to someone who may need them under certain conditions. That there's always a more fundamental duty in charity, and there's a more fundamental right to life. So the basics are this. Number one, everything you have is ultimately from God. And number two, the things of the world are given for the good of all, and in a particular way, the good of the church. So in Ephesians 4, St. Paul talks about this even in terms of the graces you've received and in charismatic gifts, and says, well, how is God going to use those for the building up of his kingdom, for the building up of the church? So whether it's that you've been extremely blessed financially, or you've been really blessed with some other means, maybe you're a really talented speaker or writer, or you're really compassionate, or fill in the blank, whatever that is, where are the areas in which you have been enriched by God? Now, maybe you've done something to cultivate that, but those are still ultimately gifts and talents from God that are for the good of others. So the rich exist for the sake of the poor, and the poor exist for the sake of the rich, so that we can lead one another into heaven.
888-318-7884 is the number, 888-318-7884. Joe Heschmeyer from shamelesspopery.com is our guest. And if you have questions about the Catholic theology of giving, which does involve a conversation about the Catholic teaching on property, and when we say Catholic, we're talking about what Jesus taught, what was handed on to us from the apostles who took it directly from the mouth of Jesus. So if any of this is shocking to you, we'd love your call. If you'd just like some help about how to make sense of this, 888-318-7884. Right now, I've got to let you know if you want to give something. Well, we got some stuff over at shop.catholic.com. How was that for a transition, Joe? Was that just shameless?
Yeah. That was shameless.
You can. We have a brand new School of Apologetics, however, and you can sign up instantly for the new School of Apologetics. For the first time ever, we've got Catholic Answers gift certificates, and we've got hundreds of ebooks, e-magazines, and MP3s. The reason I'm saying all of this e-stuff is maybe you want to give some of that stuff and you're worried about delivery time. You can get all of those things at shop.catholic.com right now.
This is Archbishop Paul Coakley of the Archdiocese of Oklahoma City, and you're listening to Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Tis the season for Christmas programming. Join EWTN Radio Christmas Eve and Christmas Day for the 48 Hours of Christmas with Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Bob Cratchit applauded.
Let me hear another sound from you, Cratchit, and you'll keep your Christmas by losing your job.
Don't be angry, Uncle. Come, dine with us tomorrow.
But Scrooge refused.
The 48 Hours of Christmas, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, our guest. Joe is the proprietor of Shameless Popery. He's also the founder, and you will almost always, well, I shouldn't say almost always, pretty basically always you can find something there that you'll enjoy reading. And virtually every time you post something, it's something that it's very much worth spending the time with. Recently, he posted an article called The Theology of Giving, and we're talking about that. If you have questions about the theology of giving, 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. I will say this, Joe, as I listen to you, I feel like maybe it's possible to go, wait a minute, nobody told me that becoming a Christian, being an adult and mature Catholic was going to mean people were going to have a claim on my money.
Yeah, it's even more fundamental than that. I'd say two things. Number one, Jesus pretty regularly says, count the cost before you become a disciple. So if you didn't read that, that's really on you. Number two, there's even a more fundamental duty just on the order of creation. So Aquinas has a beautiful theology of this, where he explains, like, this is not just a consequence of the fall, and it isn't just some man-made sort of institutional rule. But rather, when you go back to Genesis and you see the different days of creation, it glorifies God more to have a diverse creation with different levels of glory rather than just to have everything be the same. Like, if all creation was just a bunch of hippos from top to bottom, that wouldn't be as good as having different days of creation with different things that give glory to God. And then even on the level of the angels, we got different angels, like angels and archangels, seraphim, cherubim, and so on. But that this works because those who have more are called to more, Luke 12:48. And so one of the ways that expresses itself is those who've been given a lot need to take care of those who have less to give.
And so we should see that as an opportunity then.
Yeah, absolutely. It's an opportunity even just to express more of who you are and who you were made to be. I mean, it's in the words. Like if you say if so-and-so is gifted or they are talented, you're recognizing the fact that these are gifts given them by God. And the word talented comes from the parable of the talents. So there's an inequality there. One person has five, one has two, one has one. But they're not called to just bury their talents or use them entirely for themselves. They're called to turn them over so they can bear fruit for the kingdom.
You are strikingly un-American today. Now you're saying we're not all equal. Before you said private property is not absolute. I better go to callers before you cause any more trouble.
You know, I also insulted your Santa hat as being premature for because it's not the Christmas
season. This is an Advent hat. This is not a Santa hat.
My mistake.
I know you, Joe Heschmeyer. You don't want any Christmas before Christmas. This is an Advent hat that I'm wearing. Pat in Dallas, Texas, listening on the wonderful Guadalupe Radio, is up first today. Pat, your question for Joe.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I was listening to your comments with regard to giving to the church, and I do believe that everyone should be giving according to their means. And I've just heard a lot of comments recently, and I've been one of the ones that have a comment myself with regard to giving, not knowing if what we are giving to the church is going to the diocese to pay for the cost of the sexual abuse scandal in the form of either settlements with victims, increased cost of insurance, and that sort of thing, attorney's fees. And because of where the problem stemmed, I have a little bit of a difficulty supporting things that are diocesan oriented. I just like your comments on that.
Fair enough. Joe, what do you make of that? I'm sure you've heard this.
I have. I'm glad you mentioned it, Pat, because it's something that people say quite frequently. I'd say a few things. Number one, some of the money, like money going to victims. I don't have a problem with it. And I'd be surprised if many people did, if they really thought it through, that the idea that, you know, we're financially providing for people who've been terribly hurt by priests, that seems like a really good thing. But the second thing is we have to be careful as givers that we actually give. If we put money in something and we really carefully dictate where the money is going to go to, we haven't really given it. We've invested it maybe, but if we still have a bunch of strings attached, we haven't really let go, and so we haven't really given. And I think the best biblical evidence for this is in Mark 12, in which Jesus does two things back to back. First, in verses 38 to 40, he criticizes scribes. And one of the things he criticizes them for is reciting long prayers and devouring widows' houses. In other words, they're using their position of religious authority to exploit the weak and the poor. And then the very next thing he does, beginning in verse 41, is he sits down and he sees a woman come in, a widow, and she has two mites, which are small coins, and she puts both of them in, and he praises her for her generosity. In other words, yes, in the days of old, as now, the money you gave at the temple or the money you gave at church might be misused, but that doesn't exempt you from your obligation to provide. That's on them and not you. But if you don't give, that is on you. So in the case of tithing, we see even Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew pays the temple tax, even though he knew that the people who received that money used it badly.
Pat?
Yes, I'm listening.
I was just wondering if what you make of that.
Well, I agree with what he's saying, and I understand the scripture readings with regard to tithing and giving without thought. I never did give it a thought. I never had any thought whatsoever until all of this recent scandal came up and the cost, and some of the properties have had to be sold in order to pay. I don't have a problem paying victims. What I have a problem with, I guess you could say, is supporting something that I'm not sure has been addressed fully. And I'm not sure that by increasing gifts to the church and that may be going to the diocese will not be used to cover expenses associated with this. I don't have a problem covering victims' claims. I think that's very important. They were abused and they deserve something. And, you know, compensation for what they've been through, the cost of therapy and everything else involved. I guess it's just, I don't know, it's hard to determine how I truly feel about where the money's going. I never even gave it a thought before all of this happened. And yeah. Then mm-hmm. Properties had to be sold, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'd add then is the lawyers are going to get paid either way. And so if there's not enough money, it isn't that they're going to stop paying lawyers, and it's not like they're going to stop paying the expenses that you do object to. It's rather that they stop things like the upkeep of inner city churches that can't pay for themselves, or evangelical outreach and different, you know, ways the church reaches out. In other words, the things that are unfortunately too often on the chopping block are the very things we most want to ensure the church is doing at the diocesan level. So when we kind of try to withhold the money from the church strategically, I'm not convinced that strategy is sound. I don't see it working very much. But I mean, if your conscience is such that you can't give to the diocese, maybe you increase your giving to the local parish. You are bound canonically to give to assist with the needs of the church. So the church has what is necessary for divine worship, for the works of the apostolate and of charity, and for the decent support of ministers. That is what you and I are bound to as a matter of justice. The particulars of how that plays out, that can be a matter of conscience. But we do have a duty to give to the church, even if, again, we don't always like the way the money gets used, and someone may be morally culpable for how they misused money we gave.
Pat, thank you very, very much for it's a difficult question, and many, many people are asking it. Really appreciate the call. I hope that Joe's answer was helpful. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. We're talking about the theology of giving. We go now to Jerry in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on Iowa Catholic Radio. Jerry, your question for Joe.
Hi, thank you very much. Okay, one, is there a rule of thumb as far as how much to give? Is 10% the rule of thumb in your giving? And also, too, in that same vein, if you had trouble with the stewardship, like at a parish level or whatever, is it fair to give to another parish in your diocese that doesn't have as much in lieu of giving to your own parish? Is that fair?
Yeah, those are really good questions. I want to give kind of a nuanced answer because this is an area where I think a lot of Catholics kind of get mixed up. So I work for a group called School of Faith, and this time of year, we approach people a lot for end-of-year giving. And a fair number of people will have the reaction, well, like, well, I pay my tithe. You know, I give to the church 5% or 10% or whatever. And so they don't really understand that these are different buckets, as it were, that there are different ways we are called to give, and that there's a different kind of standard, so to speak, with each one. Now, the 10% rule is from the Old Testament. That was giving specifically to the temple. And that is no longer a precept of the new law. Instead, it's based on what you're able to provide. Now, that is not a very clear standard, but it's a standard that hopefully encourages generosity. I think if at the end of the year, the amount that you've given in tithing, almsgiving, and charitable giving isn't approaching 10%, barring some really extreme circumstances, I think that would be a pretty good sign that you're not giving enough. But for each one, there's a little bit of a standard. So I quoted to Pat the standard for giving to the material needs of the church, that every Christian has an obligation to assist for what's necessary for divine worship, the works of the apostolate and of charity, and the decent support of ministers. In the case where your parish is already doing really well in those regards, but the parish next door isn't, then I think a case can be made in conscience to give to that parish instead. It gets a little gray when it comes to something like the modern, you know, a lot of young people, especially today, may be connected to 5 or 6 different parishes. And so then there's this question of, well, if I'm being spiritually nourished at parish A, but I live in the boundaries of parish B, or if I'm Spanish speaking, I go to the Spanish speaking parish C, you know, it gets a little murky. So you might find different canon lawyers giving you a different kind of rule or standard that they would propose. I would just say, if you're giving generously to help the upkeep of the church, you've met that first one. For the second, the closest we get to a standard is Luke 3, in which Jesus says, "He who has 2 coats, let him share with him who has none, and he who has food, let him do likewise." So if you find yourself having more than what you need, you should be giving that away, or at least sharing it in some way. And there are different ways that you can share that. But I think you should be very mindful of, what have I received, and then how can I share it? Now, Aquinas would talk about what's called the order of charity, which is that you have a duty first to your own family, and then it kind of extends in concentric circles. to those further and further away from you. But be mindful of who God has put in your life, particularly those who are needy in some way, materially or otherwise, that you can give to. The third, charity, there is no limit to charity. So I would say in that sense, give as much as you can, and you won't find God at the end of time saying, you know, you really were too charitable. We don't like that much charity up here, because he is perfect, infinite charity.
Jerry, how does that sound?
Excellent answer. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate
Thanks,
the call. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Our number is 888-318-7884. Do you ever think in terms of stages of life, Joe, that, you know, right now, we're on our third kid and we're struggling and we have to limit our giving now, but later we'll get back to that? Or how do you feel about that kind of thinking?
You know, I think there's something to be said for it, but I would say people who have been in those tough straits and given tend to say that God really rewarded them for that generosity.
Amen, brother. Okay, thank you very, very much. You can hear the music, so we'll be right back. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. If you have questions about the Catholic theology of giving, you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Right back after this.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, the Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible, Jimmy Akin's The Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the church. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Tomorrow on More to Life, Me, Me, Me
will help you handle all those self-centered people in your life.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
A very blessed Advent to you and yours. I am Cy Kellett, your host. This is Catholic Answers Live. Lots of folks on the line, so I'm going to get right to them. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Joe recently wrote an article on his podcast. No, what do you call it? Blog, right? That's what you call
blog.
It. Shamelesspopery.com on the theology of giving. That's what we're discussing, the theology of giving, as we are in the time of giving right now. We'll go to Jeff now in Irving, Texas, listening on Guadalupe Radio. Jeff, your question for Joe.
Hi, I was just wondering about the need to balance, you know, retirement planning with generosity. In my own situation, I've got a, you know, our retirement person said that I really need to put more money away into retirement, and it's kind of hard to figure out, okay, you know, how much more can I divide this up and, you know, be generous and yet be, prudent towards retirement at the same time.
Yeah, that is one of the toughest questions for a few reasons. Number one, the future is always uncertain. Number two, people are living longer now than they were before. And I would just say this, you know, in the parable where the man has a barn and then he has a very successful harvest and he builds a larger barn so that he can basically retire. And he says, then I can eat, drink, and be merry. That's where the phrase comes from. The Lord responds, you fool, tonight I'll demand your life from you. And he accuses him of not investing in the things that last. So the Protestant pastor Francis Chan illustrated this really well with a rope analogy, where he took a rope that ran all the way off stage, and he had a little piece marked on it at the very end, just a couple inches long. And he said, if this rope is your life, this shaded area here is your life on earth before you die. And that we spend so much time worrying about the next little spot on that marked part of the rope that we aren't preparing proportionately for the things of eternity. And that, I think, is the best standard I would give, that are we investing in eternity or are we just investing in spending the rest of our days here on earth? So I can't tell you, you know, percentage-wise or how much money to leave aside. I know people don't want to be a burden for their loved ones, but I think if at the end of your life you're a burden for your loved ones because you were so generous with how you gave of your money, God is not going to hold that against you.
Jeff, that is a tough one. What do you make of that answer?
Well, it's realistic, you know. I mean, I do want I'm very aware of the length of eternity as opposed to our short life on earth. And so that's great. I appreciate it.
Good.
All right, Jeff, thank you very, very, very much. As I said, there are lots and lots of calls today, so I will keep moving. Jeff, thanks. The number is 888-318-7884, and we're talking about the theology of giving, the Catholic teaching on giving with the very stern Joe Heschmeyer. We go now to... I haven't categorized you that way before, have I, Joe? The very stern.
No, I think this is new.
Today, you're very stern. Today, you're very stern. You seem to feel like Jesus wants us to give to other people. I'll allow you to be stern about that. Our next caller, however, is an anonymous caller. Anonymous, thank you very, very much. Are you there with us?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. This is actually very similar to the caller before. Dealing with generosity and retirement. Is there any validity to the argument, okay, I'll save more now and then I can invest that money and then over, you know, 40 years of compounded interest, instead of giving $5,000 this year, that's going to be $40,000 when I retire and then I can make a bigger impact. Is there any, how does that play into the theology of giving?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I think the answer is probably yes and no. So on the one hand, Christ gives the parable of the dishonest steward. This is one of the weirdest parables Jesus has. And the core of it is a guy who is fighting for his own skin, makes some really smart deals so that he can keep a job after he gets fired from the job he currently has. And Christ encourages us to have that level of kind of intelligence and wit about us when we're dealing with the things of God. So in that sense, by all means, sometimes you'll find church stuff doesn't run as effectively, you know, at the parish or the diocese, because it can get a little bureaucratic and you don't want to implement any of the things that would be best practices in the business world. And I think that can be a mistake. So in that sense, looking in a smart way at the reach of the money can make sense. But I want to really heavily caveat that a lot of times when we don't give now to save up for later, it's not really about that. It's about not wanting to let go. And you're probably in a better position than I am to judge which of those categories you fall into. By all means, there are charitable projects that it's not like you just cut a check and then you use up all the money right away. And that's the best way to do things. Some charitable projects, you really do need to build up capital so that you can have something longer lasting. But I think we should be very careful about it. I know that even in the history of religious orders, the more they move away from kind of a mendicant lifestyle to building up large foundations and financial reserves for themselves, the less they're open to the movements of the Holy Spirit. And so if you watch kind of the way different evangelical orders will kind of cool off, it usually goes like this. An order starts off, they're really zealous, they're converting a lot of people. A lot of wealthy people leave them properties and things to run, and then suddenly they get bogged down in administration, and they watch that zeal kind of get dried up. And we can do the same thing where we have a desire to give, and out of a well-intentioned desire to expand the reach of the gift, we can get bogged down in planning for something 20 years from now rather than just cutting the check now. The final thing I'd say on that is that if you cut a check for whatever amount this month, or if you have a small recurring gift, you leave it up to the person you're giving to or the group you're giving to, where they can make that same decision you were thinking about making. In other words, if they think we've got enough to cover this month's bills, we can put this in the bank and it'll accrue interest, then they can do that. You don't have to do that for them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It doesn't necessarily make the discernment any easier, but it doesn't.
It doesn't, but that's a really good point that the caller made, that there is a matter of discernment here, and it's not always easy to answer these questions. But doing so with a generous heart is I suppose key. It's not going to guarantee that you give well, but it's necessary. It's not necessarily sufficient, but it is necessary. We've got to have a generous heart about it.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's precisely, I wish that God worked by just saying, do this, don't do that, and made it very simple. There's something very appealing about legalism, but instead he gives us these principles and basically says, you're an adult and you need to live this out.
Another thing, though, that I sensed in your answer to that caller, who's anonymous, that's why I'm just calling him the caller, that we can be a little bit control freaks in our giving. You know, I'm not going to give to this person because, you know, he's got a shifty look about him. Or I'm not going to give to this unless I have all these controls on it. You know, like I'll give my gift to the bishop, but I'll say it's for this or this or this, instead of saying, Bishop, you know, you and the finance council figure this out. Here's my gift. You take care of who you think needs taking care of, or help the parish that you know, that kind of thing. We don't want to let go. We want to have control all the way through the process.
Yeah, the example I always give is where someone's afraid to give money to the person who asked for it because we think they might waste it or spend it badly. But then at the end of the month, if you look at your own spending, you realize you would have done the same thing with the money.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I suppose there's the thing about, oh, you know, the person seems to be in an alcoholic stupor or something.
That's a good caveat.
And then you don't
help them make it worse.
No, you don't want to kill somebody by giving them money. But on the other hand, I see a lot of people myself, and you know, California, I heard this morning, California has half of the homeless people in, and I know some people don't like the word homeless people or, you know, but people without current residence. Half of them are in California. So we're just a terrible state. We're horrible. But one of the things that I see is people with the clear marks of struggling with mental illness, that they just have a kind of desperation about them. And if you just make a blanket, well, I'm not giving to any homeless person, then it strikes me that you're missing a lot of opportunity to help some people who really could use a few bucks to get a meal, you know, or something very basic like that.
I find that anytime this topic comes up, otherwise rational people will sometimes flip a switch. I had a guy tell me, I would never give to a poor person. And in fact,
that's what Jesus said, never give to the poor. I mean,
this was a guy who, I won't go into the details, but a guy who was like a faithful Catholic who just really heard enough horror stories that what he took away from it was the poor are just like horrible in America and they just take all the money from the government and this, that, and the other thing. And it's such a terribly uncharitable interpretation of the people God has put in our lives to give to.
So it
is something that I think we need to be willing to let go. And if we reach our last judgment and it turned out we were made fools by someone else who needed the money and or pretended they need the money and didn't, that's a very forgivable flaw.
Yeah, it seems like it. It's attributed to Aquinas, but I don't know. I've never seen it in him, but that it may have been another saint said, I would prefer to get to heaven and be told I had given money to 1,000 charlatans, but that I didn't miss the one person who needed it, than to say I never gave money to any charlatans, but I missed giving to the person who needed it. I'd rather face Jesus knowing that I hadn't missed that person who really needed it.
Exactly. Now, I mean, by all means, you know, be educated in how you're giving, you know, give wisely, but don't go overboard with that, which is, I think, the temptation many of us have.
Yeah. All right. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more on the theology of giving with Joe Heschmeyer right after this.
Hello, everyone. This is country music artist Colin Ray. Do what I do and keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
St. Paul's street evangelization isn't like other evangelism you might have seen on the streets. We don't yell, and we don't force anyone to pay attention to us. Instead, St. Paul's street evangelization is committed to presenting a positive, passionately Catholic presence to a world hungry for truth. For more information, or to start a chapter of your own, go to www.streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com. It's time to do our part.
There is tremendous power in prayer, because when we acknowledge that we don't have the power, but God does, things then begin to move for our good. Remember Matthew 19:26. But Jesus looked at them and said to them, "With men, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible." Now that's power.
Welcome back, Catholic Answers Live. We're talking about giving, the Catholic theology of giving, with one of my all-time favorite radio interlocutors, Joe Heschmeyer. And I'm wearing my Advent hat, and we're having a great time. And next up is Joe in British Columbia, which is in Canada, and he's listening on Channel 130 EWTN on Sirius XM Satellite Radio. And John, your question for Joe.
Sure. I guess it relates to an issue that was related, that was discussed previously by a lady regarding the use of funds for settlements of claims and regarding from abuse settlements and things like that. And I guess one of the challenges, and I struggle with this, is that, okay, we should go ahead and give, and I agree. But the challenge we have is right now, and this relates to all of the various meetings of the U.S. Council of Bishops, and similarly here in Canada, where everybody's talking about protocols and processes for reporting and everything else, but there's no accountability. And what I mean by that is everybody sort of talks about it, but accountability has no value if it doesn't have teeth. And it's just that simple. It doesn't work otherwise. So the concern is, I put the money out there, and things. The question is, are they continuing to perpetuate some of the sins from before? And is there anything in place to prevent that, i.e. what happened in Virginia? That's one aspect. So do I then, it's not that I stop giving. In my case, I say maybe what I'll do instead is instead of giving the money to the diocese, and I will donate to the parish, although a portion of what I donate is sent to the diocese. And maybe I'll do something like St. Vincent de Paul or some other organization that does, for example, as you mentioned, work with the homeless or something like that, or certain Catholic missions overseas. And we in Canada, we have one called Development and Peace. So is that maybe something that starts to happen? But that's the concern, I guess, and I understand where she's coming from, because it is a bit of a dilemma. And I don't know how you solve that, I don't know, but what's the response to that? Is say, okay, you know what, I maybe don't want to give to the diocese because I'm concerned about what's happening, and I'm not talking about something specific. I'm talking where there's a general concern about the overall management of funds.
All right, let's let Joe take a stab at that.
Yeah, I think you're getting to the important distinction between tithing and almsgiving. The work of something like St. Vincent de Paul, we have a duty to help support because they're taking care of the poor. And as Christians, we have a duty to help assist the poor from our own resources. That's Canon 222, Section 2. But Section 1 talks about how we also have a duty to help the institutional church with what's necessary for divine worship, the works of the apostle and of charity, and this is the kicker, the decent support for ministers. Now, that's coming from something Jesus said directly in Luke 10, where he said the laborer deserves his wages. In 1 Timothy 5, St. Paul directly applies that line to the care of Christian ministers. And so we do have a duty to take care of priests and to support the institutional church. And I know that right now, in many dioceses around the world, a fair amount of that money is mishandled or handled in just a poor way, even if not in a criminal or sinful way, at least not in the way that a Fortune 500 company might handle it. That's not new to this age. That's not new to any age. To become a bishop, to become a priest, you don't need a background in finance. So even holy bishops and priests often weren't great with money. And then you add in all of the human sins and greed and everything else that can come in. So we don't have a provisional call to give to the church only if they're holy and, by the way, good at handling money. So I'd say it is frustrating. It's frustrating to know that when I put my money in the collection plate, it may not be used as effectively as I would like. And there may be some remedy, whether that's talking to the priest or the bishop or helping to encourage the diocese to do something or not do something. But I don't think the solution there is to not give, because that door doesn't appear to be open. Again, when Christ sees the widow putting two coins into a temple coffer that we can virtually be assured was going to be misused, he doesn't say, hey, don't do that. What if you gave your money to someone else? Find someone else even poorer than you. No, he praises her for giving even in the face of that.
John, because there are so many callers, we will leave it there for right now. I hope that that was helpful to you. We're talking about the theology of giving with Joe Heschmeyer. Up next, Matt, you are next to your question for Joe.
Hi, thank you. I understood the obligation to tithe, but I wonder about almsgiving and how to classify saving for children's college, because it seems like a different kind of category, and they wouldn't have the means to pay for their own schooling, and I wouldn't be in a position to even consider this if my parents hadn't paid for my college. So does that come first or second? Where's that fall?
Yeah, I think that is a form of almsgiving in a way, that you are taking care of someone who is financially less capable. Now, St. Paul, when he writes about giving to widows, he talks about how there's first a need for their family to take care of them. So we're really talking about a fourth category, which is that you have a familial duty to those who are in your sphere, in your immediate sphere, in your household. So like when you provide enough food for your kids to eat, that's different than providing a meal for the guy who's on the street corner. This is just a basic duty as a father, which is, by the way, a check against the notion of an absolute private property right. If you had an absolute private property right, you could withhold food from your kids and they'd have no remedy against you because they didn't earn it. You did. But of course, no one is advocating anything that extreme. You have a duty as a parent to take care of your kids. And I think it's legitimate to say one aspect of that, depending on the culture and society and the like, could be saving for their college education. I think that's not just a material thing. It's probably also helping them to have the tools to do things like get scholarships and the rest. So I would view that as a distinct obligation as a father, but a legitimate claim that the money can make that isn't just selfishness.
Matt, we'll have to leave it there because as a lot of folks on the line, let's go to Patrick in Rockwall, Texas, listening on 910 AM Guadalupe Radio. Patrick, your question for Joe Heschmeyer.
Hi, guys. Happy Advent.
Happy Advent.
I guess my question is, when you fall on hard times, let's say you have a job reduction and suddenly your income goes down by like a third or something, and you've been given pretty charitably to a number of charities, what's a good way to figure out kind of how to scale back to income?
Yeah, I think it does scale back. I think that's kind of implicit in your question. But when Jesus says things like the man who has two coats, let him give to the one who has none. If you suddenly find yourself without a coat or with just one coat, the obligation changes. And there are times where you may be the person in need of charity rather than the one giving it. And that can be something that really draws you closer to God. I was talking to a guy within the last couple of weeks who had been pretty successful and had already been, I think, a pretty good giver. But then he lost his job and things were really tight for a while. And people from the parish were bringing him food and groceries. And it was really humbling for him to have to accept that. But it helped him see the good of it. And I think it made him in the long run a much more generous person than he was maybe even before. So I think even in those times, God can use that either to encourage you to give out of your poverty, as Jesus says of the widow I just mentioned, or as a way to receive charity from others and allow yourself to be humbled in that way.
And again, we'll leave it there because we got to keep moving. But thank you. I hope that was helpful to you. Carol in Lawrenceburg, Georgia, listening to EWTN Radio Online. You are next with Joe Heschmeyer. Your question, please.
My question is, you know, giving to charities is one thing. Giving to an organization that does not say where the money is going is something else. What about the Vatican using Peter Pence money to cover their shortfalls on their administrative costs?
Well, I think I might have heard you're talking about a recent news story, right? That this came up in the news?
And I also read an article on one of the EWTN things.
Okay.
This has been going on since Peter Pence was started back in like Pope Pius 8 or 9 or 10 or something. I mean, this is a constant thing.
Okay, but let's let Joe. Joe, are you familiar with the story?
I've read the headline. I know the basics. So Peter Pence is one of the oldest papal charities. And, I mean, the name was originally you would give a pence. And then when millions of people would do that, it would add up. And it was to take care of the poor. But apparently this scandal recently, I think it was in the Wall Street Journal, talked about how with a financial shortfall, someone moved money from Peter Pence to meet the operational needs of the Vatican. That is an abuse of the money because this is money given for almsgiving, being used for the institutional upkeep of the church, and those are two distinct things, as we've been talking about all hour. And that's a shame. I think that's a travesty. I think it puts a black face on a really good charity, Peter Pence. And I imagine it's going to mean fewer people giving in the future. I want to come back to that. We still have a need to take care of the institutional church distinct from that. But in terms of almsgiving, honestly, I think a lot of people are going to say we can find better ways to make sure the money actually gets to the poor. And I think that's a legitimate response to this kind of scandal.
Thank you, caller. I appreciate that. We scandals will come. They do come. And we're financial scandals are actually kind of common in the history of the church. It's a lot of money and people make bad choices. So I'm glad you actually brought that up, Carol. But as you said, Joe, that doesn't remove our obligation to give in general to the church. But it might make us say, well, I got to. There are things that are, well, first of all, people will send you a fake email telling you that it's from the church. I mean, you do have to have some kind of caution about where your money is going. It's reasonable to have some kind of caution about it.
Absolutely. I just had a thread with my in-laws where my sister-in-law, Elizabeth, was talking about almost getting scammed. And it turned out almost all of us had some experience with someone approaching us for money through the internet, pretending to be somebody else and trying to get, you know. So, those things are out there. We do have to be prudent. But that doesn't eliminate the need to give. So give, but give wisely.
Our guest is Joe Heschmeyer. You can find him over at Shameless Popery. Could you say something about the School of Faith real quick?
Yeah, so School of Faith, we have a daily rosary. You can get it at dailyrosary.net, where we go through the mysteries of the faith. And it's part of our broader mission to help people grow in friendship with Jesus, friendship with others, and to learn how to help others to do the same. And we're focusing on evangelizing Kansas City and the world.
Well, Joe, I enjoyed the hour. I hope you'll do it again before too long.
I'd be happy to.
And are you sleeping at all with the brand new 1-month-old baby or a little bit?
Wife has been extremely generous in letting me sleep on work nights.
She is extremely generous. I hope you are grateful.
I am.
You can find Joe at shamelesspopery.com. Take a look at it, shamelesspopery.com. Coming up next, Scott Hahn is going to be with us. We're going to talk about Bible and liturgy. Surprise, surprise. We're going to talk about the Bible with Scott Hahn. We'll do that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.